Do you remember the Summer of Love? Do you remember MSNBC telling us that there were mostly peaceful protests, even though they were burning in Minneapolis and Chicago, Detroit, St. Louis, New York, every major city burning, destruction. Chicago has never recovered, has never recovered. Let me say it again, has never recovered from the BLM protest riots, glorifying George Floyd and making George Floyd into a hero in an attempt to destroy Donald Trump. And so why is Governor Pritzker leading the charge, demanding even more aggression, more violence? Some say he's doing the political smart thing. And others of us say he's just going back and dredging us through his nightmare. Joining us to discuss all this is my good friend, Tom Serafin of Serafin and Associates. And with us always, as usual, is Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN News, future physics teacher, friend of cats, husband to the lovely Christine. And me, I'm John Cass, 40 years a newspaper man in Chicago, with my own commercials now, my own website, John Cass News. Hope you subscribe. And where are you as Pritzker plays a game where he wants to get in front of AOC, wants to be the leader, demands to be heard, seeking the presidency? You're on the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.
So this is a guy who lives high on the hog, and he has this Tammany Hall style attitude to power. And it's the Chicago way, absolutely.
Look, the Chicago way is a deep cultural phenomenon.
It's the Chicago way.
The Chicago way. That's the focus.
In a tower by the river, there lived a man. There was a man who took a stand. With pen and paper in his hand, defeating foes in every ward with a pen more mighty than the sword. No escape from his ink lasso. In a tower by the river, Castle.
Here's how you get him. He pulls a knife, you pull a gun. He sends one of yours to the hospital, you send one of his to the morgue. That's the Chicago way.
Everybody, welcome to another edition of the Chicago Way podcast. Governor Pritzker is out there running for president. He wants to get the band back together, not the old band, Bob Dylan, but I mean a new band where he wants them to play the song of 2020, which was the Summer of Love. He's calling for violence. He wants to distinguish himself from the rest of those who want to be president. And it's all confusing, but the one man who can unconfuse us all is Tom Serafin, my good friend, principal of Serafin and Associates. And along with him, of course, as always, is Jeff Carlin, executive producer at WGN Radio. And I'm John Cass, editor-in-chief of John Cass News. And I just heard three or four commercials on the radio this morning, so it was great to hear them. And the two men who are responsible for that are right here, Jeff Carlin and Tom Serafin. So, gentlemen, what about the Summer of Love revisited?
Yeah, Tom, I don't know what your take on what's happening, but it sounds like the first domino has fallen with Dick Durbin announcing he's not going to be seeking re-election, and the second domino being J.B. Pritzker's weight loss, as we've been calling for. As soon as that happens, you know he's running for president.
Is that going on? I haven't seen him. I mean, I've seen the pictures. I mean, but Dick Durbin at the top of the ticket at United States Senate, the first elected in 82 for United States Congress, after Mike Madigan cut Macon County in, which is the home county of Decatur, Illinois, which provided the surplus number of votes necessary to beat Paul Finley, the Republican candidate, the Republican incumbent at the time. He spent a lot of time in the House of Representatives, then took over for Paul Simon after Paul left the United States Senate, going to leave a big hole in this state. He's been in Washington, D.C. since 1982, been the go-to congressman and senator for anything downstate, and anything downstate means anything south of Cook County for people that needed anything. And, it's going to be a big hole to fill. It's going to be an interesting time to watch what's going to happen. All the offices for statewide office are open. People are going to be moving all over the place. You already see the lieutenant governor, who's done a heck of a job getting out early, fast, with formidable resources and the endorsement from the incumbent governor, Governor Pritzker, along with the colleagues in that business as lieutenant governors around the country. So then you have Senator Duckworth also endorsing her. So she came out of the box very fast, gentlemen.
And she came up out of it so fast that she destroyed the idea that you had, which was a perfect one, where J.B. Pritzker would run for the, Governor J.B. Pritzker would sit down and run for the U.S. Senate, buy that Senate seat, sit in that throne, have everybody kiss his butt. And it didn't work out, Tom.
Well, if I were probably, if I could put myself into the governor's chair, and if I were Governor Pritzker, I would have really looked, deeply at the U.S. Senate spot. I know one thing that Senator Durbin wasn't happy about, going from the majority party to the minority party. In Washington, D.C., there are big earthquakes, when you move from a minority to a majority or majority to a minority party. It's quite a humbling situation. But I thought, being in the body of the Senate, the deliberative body, a 6-year term, gives him opportunity to travel around the world to talk about his issues and the push of those issues that he's really sincere about. But it sounds like he's going to stick around here in Illinois as governor, dealing with the state with a lot of issues, and at the same time the lieutenant governor gets a real kick, a real push out of the box. I remember in 1980 I was a reporter in assignment editor at a television station in Peoria. Alan Dixon, announced within 48 hours of Senator Adlai Stevenson III announcing his retirement from the U.S. Senate. Dixon got out in front of everyone. And of course, that was just when fax machines were coming into existence. Of course, getting out of the box early in those days, meant a lot. You got a lot of momentum. And by the time other folks caught up to him, he was already way out front. In this particular instance, with images and information that is so immediate, it's not as deafening as that move was by Alan Dixon, but it's still a really smart move. Alexei Giannoulis, I think, has been running the smartest races recently statewide in Illinois. But I look to see how the lieutenant governor is going to do. She's surrounded herself with some very able people. So far, she's gone off to a nice start. Gentlemen, it's a nice start.
With over 3 decades of serving up streetwise insight and local perspective on Page Two, the voice of John Cass has a home at johncassnews.com, a place where common sense is still served daily.
Listen up. You like being treated as a chum alone, as a fool, sitting on a stool, smiling wanly at the sky?
Don't be a chum alone and subscribe at johncassnews.com.
I'm John Cass, 40 years a newspaper man in Chicago. I won't name the place. It's just the paper now.
That's the Chicago Way.
But I'm asking you to join me so you can get a decent cup of common sense, at least. You're not going to get it from the media. It's time that you join the frontier of independent journalism at johncassnews.com.
Don't get caught in the parade of chum alones.
Traditional media, mainstream media like the paper, they're all in on it. They think you're stupid. You know what they think? They think you're a chumbalone.
Subscribe at johncastnews.com now for only $50 a year and become a member of the No Chumbalone Zone.
And now back to the conversation. All right, let me ask you now. Now that you can hear me again, gentlemen.
Yeah, all right.
What am I to make of this Governor Pritzker trying to distinguish himself from the others by demanding a return to the summer of violence? Remember those days when, I'm sure the listeners have remembered, when the days of the mostly peaceful protests, when they burned how many countless cities? Chicago, Minneapolis, every other place destroyed. And he's calling on violence again. He wants that same vibe out there. But he's such a chicken bleep that he says, no, today he said, I'm not really calling for violence. But yeah, you are. You're calling for that vibe.
Here's what he said, John.
Listen, I understand the tendency to give in to despair right now, but despair is an indulgence that we cannot afford in the times upon which history turns. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption, but I am now. These Republicans cannot know a moment of peace. They have to understand that we will fight their cruelty with every megaphone and microphone that we have. We must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box. They must feel in their bones that when we survive this shameful episode of American history with our democracy intact, because we have no alternative but to do just that, that we will relegate their portraits to the museum halls reserved for tyrants and traitors.
There it is. I mean, Tom, it sounds like he's running for president to me. I don't know.
He's on the national stage. He does have ambitions. He's a young man. He's got resources. He's got a definitive staff with the intent to put him in a position to get the kind of attention he wants. And this did just that. It put him on in center stage around the country, and a lot of the nightly newscasts, the cable news networks, all featured Governor Pritzker, calling for people to get out on the streets and protest the Republicans. But I don't think it's the same thing when people say that Trump is calling for violence on this and that issue. The rhetoric is over the top on a lot of what's going on in the world today. And, he took that rhetoric right to the edge, calling for disruption. That's the term. And then also the term that I didn't like was tyrants and traitors. You can disagree with each other, but the language and how we refer to each other as messengers for our particular parties or the issues, I think is terrible. And, people keep looking for more and more attention. And in this day and age, when everything is being said on the internet, people are yelling and screaming and talking to each other in such a vile way, it's difficult to get the attention unless you use what I call hot rhetoric. And, That's what this is, I know what he's talking about. I know he's trying to urge the Democrats to get out there because right now, AOC and Bernie
he's
are
out
going
there in front of them.
Yeah, AOC and Bernie are out there trying to get some attention. But despite the fact that they have audiences, their audiences are not large and they're not organized. They don't have a message and they don't have a messenger. And right now, Governor Pritzker is filling that role.
Well, you have many on the left. I'm going to a blanket statement now from me, and choose to ignore it if you want. But I see the left. I don't really see the Democrats anymore. I see the Jacobins, the neo-Marxists. Just the other day, U.S. Representative Delia Ramirez from Illinois said Congress should not be operating business as usual. Quote, colleagues of mine should not be able to go to church or to go to the neighborhood gas station. I mean, what is going on with these people? Is it a fixation with violence? I'm starting to think it is when I see them, when I see Hakeem Jeffries just the other day saying there's two kinds of Americans, patriots and traitors. And I know who Hakeem Jeffries thinks I am. He would call me a traitor. When you get called a traitor by leaders in the government, getting the crowd to tear you piece by piece is not a difficult proposition once you've been dehumanized. And I see this happening now in my country. Yes or no, Jeff? Yes or no, Tom? Let me hear it.
I mean, I kind of lean towards more of Tom's perspective on it, that there's this, you know, one step over the line, two step over the line. I'm going another step over the line, you know, this building of a lack of decorum, and it's just nasty language. I mean, you can't say it's just the left, because Trump ran on a lot of that. You know, there were so many of his speeches where he did a lot of calling for someone to be, you know, punched and someone to be thrown out of a thing. Like, oh, hey, hit that guy.
Trump was shot. There were two attempts at assassinating
Donald Trump. But this was before that, John. I mean, this was happening. This has been his kind of his MO, is to be the pugilistic. And it's you know, I don't like it. I don't like it when Pritzker says that stuff. I mean, the line in that whole speech, which was mostly directed at what he called do-nothing Democrats who were sitting on the sidelines, the line where they need to feel it in their bones. I mean, that how do you get away from the fact that that's, you know, how do you feel something in your bones unless you're getting hit with something, right? I mean, I don't feel something in my bones unless I'm, you know, in pain. And that kind of language where it's so pointed, and then he comes out and says, oh, no, I'm talking in, you know, just making hypotheticals or whatever. I don't like it as a citizen. I'm with you. I don't like it on either side. And I fear what happens when you get it to the masses of people who don't have the forethought to see stuff for what it is.
Well, maybe there's an answer to your question, Jeff, and I'd like to ask Tom this. Is it something about the lack of Democratic leadership? They seem to be panicking now, and they're ratcheting up the panic to the point where they're hysterical over, you know, Trump's 100 days, and they've got a couple polls that show he's not doing so well. ABC and NBC, they're screaming, ah, look at the poll, it's terrible for him. And they're so excited. And then you find out that the poll samples have been skewed, and that most, like in some, I think what the ABC poll, 37 or 40% of the Republican pro-Trump voters were not in the sample poll. So you don't know. When you screw that up with sample sizes, it seems to me that you're playing another game. Yeah? No?
Yeah, you're going to have a lot of polls now. It's 100 days. You have to think of this president. And have to understand, if you give me a few minutes here, just explain my vantage point. I've never lived in my life, in my adult life, or my thinking life, I should say, because I've been an adult and not 100% thinking all the time, but in my thinking life, I've never lived through a 4-year presidency. I mean, we've had 8-year presidencies, and we've had 4 years, and then they lose. But I've never been involved with a leader in the White House that only has a 4-year term. So we always have gotten into this where people get elected and they see they have 4 years, then maybe 4 more years. And so they plan out their policies and their decision process. It's slow and deliberative, and then they take the speeches on the road, then they go to NATO and they go around the world. And this is different. This presidency and this incumbency has to do everything in 2 years. So he's approaching this thing as if he's doing urban renewal, and he's doing it. He's tearing everything down that he doesn't like, that doesn't he doesn't think works. And then he's reassembling it. It's like you're 100 days into the construction project where they are tearing down buildings. And if you take a look at what's going on there along the river by Chicago Avenue, where they're building the new casino, they tore down the entire Chicago Tribune printing operation. I watched that, you know, as I drove down the street all the time. It was a huge building, and it was kind of a hallmark or landmark going away, but they tore it all down. Now it's just a strip land, a lot of cranes, a lot of junk laying around. And then they're going to build that. And, you know, by the time the first quarter of next year comes around, there'll be a gleaming, beautiful building there where people will be able to go in and, you know, and entertain themselves and et cetera, et cetera. That's what he needs to do. And he sees that. He's got to do it right now over objections and over everybody else's concern about his current faith in the polls. So I see that process that he's doing. Can it work? I think he's going to try to thread the needle. It's worked in the past historically in the world, in world kingdoms. Can it work here in the United States? And can it work, you know, in 2 years the way he needs to get it done? He has to do it well enough in order to win the elections in the off-year election of 26 to maintain the appropriations process in the House of Representatives. Otherwise, after 18 months, he's finished as a president with any authority to get anything done. So he's got to be able to do what he's doing, fix it all up, clean it all up, and make it look nice and attractive for people in the year 2026 in November at the polling places, so that they vote and give him another 8 months, you know, 10 months in his 4-year term. So that's what he's trying to do right now. And just to go back a few steps, a few minutes ago when you talked about everybody talking about each other in such heightened language, so much hyperbolic language, you know, there's one thing that is interesting about the Pope's conclave that's coming up May 7th when they have to select the new Pope in the Catholic Church in Rome. I revisited the movie Conclave again. I really enjoyed that movie from 2024. And there was a Cardinal Lawrence that talks about, as he talks to the cardinals, he talks about certainty is the deadly enemy of tolerance. Certainty is a barrier to unity. Certainty is not healthy, because anybody gets up there and starts talking about certainty means there's no other options. He argues that a true faith embraces doubt and uncertainty, as a living faith requires wrestling with questions and finding strength in diversity of thought. And we have to have that. And so my complaint about people today, you know, talking around the world, around this country about this is the right way, this is the wrong way, I'm sorry, but certainty is the deadly enemy of tolerance. So there's got to be room for communications. There's got to be willing room to sit down and talk to each other. And you have certainty when you have no other options. To go to your question, John, that you asked 2 hours ago of me, I mean, you were asking whether or not they don't have a message or messenger. The Democrats right now are void of a really fine and articulate messenger. And they're also hurting on a message. So they're doing what has worked in the past, but the problem is they've lost their audience to the Republican Party. And that audience used to be Reagan Democrats. That audience used to be Humphrey Democrats, Alan Dixon Democrats, Proxmire Democrats. And they've moved over to the other side. But they aren't, as you mentioned in some of that polling data, they aren't solidified there. They aren't glued to that point of view. So they are concerned about the fact that this guy in the White House today is rebuilding, you know, he's doing urban renewal in D.C. He's tearing things down and he's going to rebuild it. And he needs to build it within a year. He needs to do it right away. So there's kind of a, you know, very, you know, crazy process that's showing up in front of us. And that's what people are concerned about. But he's focused. So I don't know what the outcome is. Like I said, he's going to try to thread the needle. But Cardinal Lawrence in the movie, You know, Ralph Fiennes played him. Certainty is the deadly enemy of tolerance. I thought that was an amazing line. I can understand.
Who played Cardinal George, my favorite churchman of years past?
I did see him in there.
When he was ill, and before the last conclave, he was going to it, and I remember one of the great. It's like one of the greatest nights of my life, you know, back in the day in the, you know, when I was in my 20s, I guess I wouldn't think this way, but now in this instance, I was a, you know, grown man, and I sat with Cardinal George in these two big chairs in his office, and we talked for hours. He was just such a, I don't know, a holy man. A decent man, and I miss him, and I know that the Catholic Church misses him now.
He wasn't afraid to express himself, which was good.
Yeah.
That's what I like. I like somebody at least comes out and tells us. Tells us what they're thinking. You know, essentially, I mean, the message of the movie Conclave, I hate to sound like a commercial for it, but is that the truth faith is not about rigid certainty. But it's about a dynamic and evolving relationship with God marked by both belief and doubt and a willingness to embrace the complexity and uncertainty of the human experience. Now, that's not my writing. That's somebody else that had written it, because I kept looking for that speech that he gave about certainty. Right. I had never heard that before, and I thought it came from Scripture, but I can't find it anywhere. Except for the way it was written by, I think it was Robert Harris, but explains everything to me. And I think if our politicians had a little bit less certainty in their souls, they would have a lot more heart in their message.
You know, John, I wanted to step back to the poll thing too, because I want to get to the Seraphim Power Poll, which is always one of my favorite readings. One just came out last week, but to kind of put this in a perspective. I mean, Rasmussen reports have Trump at like a 40%, you know, approval rate, whereas the NBC was at like a 55, 54. And they're real, the plus or minus on both of those is about 2 points. So they're almost even. I mean, it's hard to say that one's really out of whack when it's that close. And you know, Rasmussen does tend to lean a little more conservative. And NBC, I would assume, tends to lean a little more liberal in their, whoever's running those polls.
I think you can cherry pick whatever poll you want.
Right. Jeff. That's the point. I mean,
the point being that if you
take a shot at one versus the other,
I'm taking a shot at all of them. I don't think that these polls are showing the extent of the support that Trump has even now, 100 days out. You know,
he's been an anomaly for polling in his whole political career. So, I mean, that's the point, is that it doesn't really mean much, I don't think, as the way as people really view him.
But the way they're promoting it is like, we've got him now. He's on the run. You know, I don't see that happening.
Yeah.
I do see what Tom is saying, and part of what you're saying, that there's only a limited time to where he has to have some successes now economically. Get the tax bill through, cut the taxes, and John Cass and his wife Betty just went out for a test drive at a Genesis place out here.
Ooh.
I can't afford a Genesis, but I wanted to see what they're like. And I need to get a car. The last car I've had, my car now is like 190,000 miles. It's got duct tape holding the back door. I mean, I think I deserve a car now, and I'm waiting for the tax issues to be settled, the tariff issues. Anyone know? Do you guys know when that'll be done?
Well, the current messaging coming out of DC and a lot of the pundits on cable television is that they are so confused internally in the White House that they haven't yet been in a position to actually negotiate with people. Now, if you listen to the White House is telling you they are negotiating with people. They're close on a couple dozen different countries and putting deals together. They're close, they say, on India. They're close to saying in Europe, Britain, you know. So it's pretty hard to tell who is, you know, selling you a bill of goods on either side. So the bottom line is he's opened the door and everybody's in the room. And everybody has left the room and some are returning to the room, and his administration needs, and they are focused. Treasury Bessette, you know, I really enjoy listening to him because he's very bright. And he's very interesting, you know, the way he puts things in perspective. Everybody in that administration knows that they're on a timeline and they're in the position of making the deal or not making a deal. So it seems to me that, hey, this is your administration. This is what you wanted to do. You're doing it. And let's see it play out. And what's interesting for me is that so many people are rooting against us to succeed, or rooting against the president to succeed, which, you know, is, you know, unfortunate, because if he doesn't succeed, my 401k goes away, you know, and a lot of other people. So you don't want everybody else to be hurt. But if he succeeds based on what he says should and will happen, if he does all of this, you know, the economy will be booming again. We'll have more money circulating. We'll be in better position with our allies and other countries around the world. Why shouldn't our deficits, with trade deficits with other countries, be more balanced? You know, it seems to me a logical kind of thing. Is the way he's going about it right? If he had 8 years or the potential to have four and another four, he might do it differently. It might slow down the car to 45. But right now, the car is at 85.
You sound like those guys hating on Saquon Barkley. Like everyone in the media or the internet hating on the great Saquon Barkley for daring to go golfing with the golf maniac who happens to be president.
Yeah, you know, look, Bill Maher got a lot of disrespect from a lot of his allies because he had dinner with the president. My goodness, you know, we just got to slow down a little bit here. Certainty, you know, is the wrong way to go through life. Hate corrodes its vessel. So we really need to, you know, spend more time listening and lowering the rhetoric, I think, because there's potential for all of us to get along and be successful together.
The two things I'm certain of: Pritzker will not become president, no matter how much he wants it. And number two, the greatest Bible verse of all is the publican and the Pharisee, where the Pharisee is sitting in the back, or the publican is in the back row of the church, back pew, head down, saying, and all he does, he repeats it over and over, Kyrieleison, Lord have mercy upon me, a sinner. Lord have mercy on me, a sinner. And to me, it's the finest verse of all. I'm just saying.
You're not wrong, John. I mean, glass house is kind of my credo, and I've got enough problems in my own world that I don't need to try to take someone else down. But you're right, Tom. I think it all goes back to this idea that if whatever he's doing, if he had more time, he'd have a certainty to at least to try to attempt it. But if he can't, his party, you know, the Trump party, I don't want to call it the Republican party because I think it's really his party at the moment. If they can't keep this momentum and, you know, have a positive showing in the midterms and then next election for president, you know, this stuff might all be for naught and it'll be a lot of pain for nothing. And time will tell. But Tom, I do want to get to the power poll. And for those who don't know, the Serafin Associates put out this great monthly poll. It's, you know, as it's self-proclaimed, not a scientific poll. It's more just a, you know, feeling the pulse of people who in different various fields who are leaders in the city of Chicago. And this month, your lead question, actually, Pritzker is the focused almost, not the lead question, but one of the questions. Pritzker has a center stage on it, does he not?
That was a fun question. We asked our power pollers, who would you rather have dinner with from a notable Illinois file? Who's your pick? This month, the number one pick was 34% Governor J.B. Pritzker. More people would like to sit down with him and have a dinner conversation at leisure. 23% said former Chicago Mayor Richard Daley. 12% said former House Speaker Michael Madigan. 8% said former Governor Rod Blagojevich. 7% State Alexei Giannoulis, State Secretary of State Alexei. 4% said former Mayor Lori Lightfoot. 3% said Cook County Board President Tony Preckwinkle. 3% said Susana Mendoza, our comptroller. 3% said Lieutenant Governor Juliana Stratton. 2% said Mayor Brandon Johnson. And 1% said former state's attorney Kim Fox. There you go.
Only 1%?
1% for Kim Fox, yes.
Oh, how far her star has fallen.
Actually, you know, I would find a dinner conversation where rather interesting looking back. Sure. To what she did, how she did it, and who impacted her, why she did some of the things she did. She had a very electric, you know, incumbency there, and I would be interested in knowing.
My first question, why did you lie to me, Kim? My first question.
That'd be before you have your roll and salad? Or
no, it was, she lied when we were having breakfast, and she was telling me that her mom worked at City Hall. She had a Her mom was a political, had a political job at City Hall, and her mom never did anything political. Never. And I'm looking at her like, wait, Kim, are you telling me your mom was not political, but all the City Hall jobs in the out of Cabrini Green, which was where she lived. What were dedicated, those jobs were dedicated by George Dunn and Two-Ton Tony Taramina and the trucking guy. And you could tell me that? I just couldn't believe it. But, you know, we started off on the wrong foot with the lie because I just couldn't believe her anymore. Well, what can I say? I want to be charitable now.
I can't believe Daley doesn't top that list because I mean there's just so much.
Richard
there.
J or Richard M?
J was
at 23. He was number two. I mean,
I love to sit with him.
I saw him the other night. He looked terrific.
Rich.
I was at a restaurant. He was at a restaurant. He was leaving. I was standing, you know, near the entrance, and he came out and said hello to, you know, everybody, said hello to me. And he looked fabulous. It looked like he could be mayor. I mean, he looked like he looked like the mayor. He acted like the mayor. He talked like the mayor. He is the mayor. A lot of people that wish he was still the mayor.
Speaking of dinner, where was this dinner?
I stopped by the Erie Cafe, which is on the foot of Erie and the river.
That's a noted hangout of Tom Serafin.
Well, because it's within walking distance. I can do a lot of things within walking distance.
What's your go-to meal there, Tom, at the Erie Cafe?
Yeah, well, Stasha, the bartender, he's a great guy. And, you know, I like the people that work at restaurants. I like to go to places where the good bartenders, you know, there's a lot of Jeff, you know, who bartends on Tuesdays and Thursday night at Prime and Provisions. Jeff is a friend that goes back, you know, back to the 70s where he used to tend bar at Billy's, you know, and then, 25 years at PJ.
Jeff is at Prime and Provisions. I got to go there.
Yeah. Oh, it's, and you know, they have a great happy hour, but they've got one of the best burgers, you know, if you're sitting at the bar and you're on your way home, you don't want a big meal, but if you want a burger, their burger is just outstanding.
All right. Well, I got a confession to make about food. I broke my diet the other day, and I'm not supposed to eat pizza, but I went there because my sons were having their birthday party, twin sons for how long? 30 years old. And you know who's there? And I walk in and they tell me he's in the... Two coppers come up and say he's in the back. You should say hi to him.
The governor, the mayor. No,
the boss, Mike Madigan.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. And he couldn't, you know, so I said, Betty, I've got to go. I've got to say hello. And just out of respect. And she's like nervous, you know, she thought, oh my God, don't get in an argument with him. I'm not going to get in an argument. So I went on and saw Mike Madigan. He was sitting with an old acquaintance of yours, Tom, Louis Vivarito.
Oh.
And so old guys sitting at a pizza, broken down newspaper man, Mike Madigan, ready to go away. What did they say, to college? I'm sorry for him, and I don't wish him anything. And I don't know what Louis is doing, but it was nice to see Mike. And I said, I didn't say I regret anything I wrote, because I'm not going to do that. But I did want to express some sort of concern for him, and legitimate. Because you know what? I was walking past to see him, and I remember my good friend, Tom Serafin. You remember him? Tom Serafin has a party in his at Butch McGuire's every Christmas. And it's probably the most well-attended, best party of the season. And you know what it's about? It's about putting the swords away for one night. All these people from different walks of political life put their swords away, have a drink, leave them at the door, right?
Great. Well, you know, number two there was Rich Daley. Number three was House Speaker Madigan. And number four to have dinner with is Rod Blagojevich. I actually, you know, I vote in the power poll. I hope you gentlemen vote. I voted to have dinner with House Speaker Madigan. You know, I thought, having been in Springfield when he was a young legislator in the 70s, and he had been down there in 68, 69 at the CONCON, Constitutional Convention, as a delegate. I mean, he's seen the state. He's seen it all. And he's heard it all. And he's seen the good, the bad, and the ugly. And he did it from a small little perch in his 14th ward there in the south side of Chicago. And he never became a big gun downtown, you know, like other aldermen have begun. You know, he kind of stuck to his own little territory, but he reached every corner of Illinois. I mean, there isn't a Democrat in the state of Illinois that is something today that hasn't had some touch point with Speaker Madigan, the Democratic Party that he ran for so many years, almost half a century, actually. I would love to have a conversation laid back, you know, over a little glass of cognac and just saying, hey, you know, remember what happened? What happened there? You know, it would have been a fun conversation to have. And there's a lot of talk that Governor Rod Blagojevich, who's number fourth on that list, might end up, you know, jumping into the Republican primary for the U.S. Senate.
You guys see any Republican candidate out there? I mean, I see Jeannie Ives, but that's it.
Jeannie Ives, and, you know, I've heard that maybe Pat Brady might look at it, but, you know, he's very happy where he is without having to run. His cousin, was Dan Brady, was just elected to the mayor of Bloomington. He understands the game of politics. But, you know, there's Ryan Spain out there who might take a shot at governor or secretary of state. Young, bright legislator from Peoria, really a nice young man. And they just don't have a lot of candidates in the Republican. The problem the Republicans have in Illinois is kind of mirrors the problem the Democrats have nationally. They just don't have a big bench right now. And they're lacking a message.
Yeah. The only message they have is Trump bad. That'll be interesting. Although Blago has, I mean, a lot of people like him, and a lot of people, you know, do feel that he was wrong to an extent. So I would keep an eye on him.
I mean, he was, I think, sentenced, John, correct me if I'm wrong here, but I think he was sentenced to 14 years.
I believe that's right.
And he did seven or eight.
8 years.
Yeah, and most people in his position, there haven't been that many, but very few have been sentenced to 14 years, almost a decade and a half. And without the pardon from the president, he'd still be sitting around, you know, peeling potatoes.
Right. Especially if you look at, you know, what Madigan and Burke are going to get or have gotten, you know, it's peanuts compared to what he was doing. And they're all kind of doing the same thing. If you look at it from a 30,000 foot view, I mean, it's just a lot of, I'll do this if you do that and we'll get some stuff done together. You know, that kind of mentality. He just might have been more foolish in the way he went about it.
Yeah, it'd be an unreal situation if he got into that race.
Yeah.
Talk about somebody who could, you know, track the television cameras. Whoa, mm-hmm. Whoa.
It'd be fun to watch.
Yeah, whoa. You know, there's going to be a lot of other candidates that are going to get into this thing, especially on the, in the Democratic primary. But, you know, that's going to be a Donnybrook. And the lieutenant governor has done a good job getting out front on that one, though.
Yeah, well, we'll see about her. I'm not as enthused as others. And I think I attribute that to my own curmudgeonly nature. I don't happen to see the good in all the people like you do, Tom. I don't know why. I mean, I've known you for 40 years. You try to find the good in everyone. And I see them. I see a Republican. I see a Democrat. Get out. Republican, are you a combine weasel? Get out. And I don't have any. I don't have a charitable bone in my body when it comes to politicians, and I think that's where I'm lacking.
We need more people to get in, especially young people. We need more people to get into the business, and you know, you find the more senior individuals in the business that speak, you know, with language that divides rather than that brings people together. Younger people, you know, have a tendency to want to bring people together, but you have to be understanding and not always tolerant, but you have to be understanding about, you know, what's going on in the world today. And, you know, the United States Senate is a slow, methodical, small, accomplished situation, you know, and I say that having worked, you know, in the Senate for 3 years, you know, as a staffer, there's so much work that needs to go into pushing the ball 3 feet, where, you know, a lot of people could use the same energy and do a lot more and a lot faster in other bodies. So you have to be patient and you have to be able to communicate and you have to be able to get along with people and you have to be, you know, considerably bright so that you can exchange ideas. It's supposed to be the thoughtful body of government where they could exchange those, a deliberative body where they would debate issues deeply into their issues so that, you know, once decisions are made after 6 years, you know, you really make the effort to get to know. The House is a coarse group of individuals that are elected every 2 years, yelling and screaming, blah, blah, blah.
Hot takes.
Yeah, but, right. But this hot is... takes. The Senate is supposed to be different. Durbin did a nice job. Senator Dick Durbin did a nice job in bringing home the bacon to Illinois, especially downstate. Downstate, you know, I quote Pat Brady a lot on this one. He was on television with me in some kind of discussion about who was elected or who wasn't elected or whatever. And Pat Brady told everybody, you know, the only thing left downstate are universities and prisons. There is no economy. There is no industry. There is, you know, very little for people to find work, you know, with. And something has to get done there. And what we have there is the result of what Dick Durbin was able to produce. But we need a voice for downstate, and we don't have that right now. We have a lot of people elected from up here, but we don't have a lot of people elected from downstate.
Now I must. Resident of the great state of Indiana, and I keep remember talking to old timers and hearing how Illinois was very much like Indiana at one point, and then they installed a Harley Davidson riding political guy, Mitch Daniels, as their governor. And he started taking, he took the budget axe. He said, it's going to be very difficult and probably going to hate it, but I'm going to start cutting. And he cut and he cut and he cut. And there were screams and anguish and all that. But all that political language went away because people are coming here and they're working here. I don't know how to explain it. Maybe that's the way to do things.
Huh? I don't know. It's, you know, a full stomach, good education for your kids, and a good job, you know, goes a long way with people.
Speaking of education, I just looked at the wirepoints.org. They've got 80 schools on this list from Illinois. Wirepoints.org. 80 schools in which there are no students proficient in math or reading. 80. You see that, Jeff? Did I send that to you?
I did. That's not a surprise, unfortunately. It's been a trend that's been happening in the state for quite a few years now.
Well, you know, and you see it daily if you're walking through the city. You see people that are so rude to other people. Yesterday's an older woman with a walker was trying to get through a door. And the young people, and I say young people, everybody under 40, going in and out, and nobody holding the door open for her. And I was parked on the curb waiting for somebody. I put my lights on and, you know, put the brake on and went over there and opened the doors for her. But how hard would that be to do something for that lady? Or, you know, take some time off, take the earmuffs off, earphones off, and just say, hey, let me hold the door for you. That's what worries me. What's going to happen to this generation? When they get to be older, who's going to take care of them? Who's going to have that ethic, the work ethic, the caring ethic, the charitable nature inside of themselves to say, I should be helpful to that person? When they haven't been taught there, they don't have any understanding of what it is to lend a hand or build a bridge.
You know, that's okay. I've known you for more than 40 years. And I think I said it before in the podcast, but Tom Serafin, you are the richest man in town. And I know why, because you care about people like that. I've seen it all my life. I call you up and I said, Tom, I can't stand this SOB alderman or congressman, this blah, 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 yakety yak. And you're the first one to just say, hey, John, well, what about this? You don't say I'm an idiot, even though I am an idiot. You say, well, you offer something of that person that I should consider, something good. Like, did you know that this guy ran into a burning building and saved all those kids or something like that? And then you maybe if it's not that. But it's that type of thing.
Well, you know, John, I appreciate that, but it's in all of us. It just hasn't been tapped. You know, we all are blessed with a soul and a heart and, you know, a good mind. But it's up to each one of us. Look at Jeff is going to be a teacher of physics, which, you know, it was a physics teacher in seventh or eighth grade that inspired my son Mitchell to go on, become an aeronautical engineer and put 25 satellites into outer space and now develop Wi-Fi for outer space in between planets and vehicles that are flying up there. But it was a teacher that inspired him to want to do that. I asked him one day, what was your best school? You know, and he went to Kensington, you know, where our kids all went preschool, then Ogden right. Park Junior High School, then Nazareth High School, and then Northwestern. And he said Park Junior. That's where I had that professor, you know, that was so good in physics. You know, Jeff, what you're going to do with the kids is going to inspire somebody somewhere that's going to move people. So we all have that. The worst part about the world today is that there's so much hate between people that don't know each other. You know, just because
we all have so much more in common than we realize.
Right. And you know, politics and all that, and, you know, and I keep saying this, I really believe it. Hate just, you know, degrades the vessel that it's carried in. I mean, it destroys it. So, you know, I don't want to sound like a ex-seminarian like I am, but I mean, it, but you know, we, I can understand where the governor, as we opened the program, where the governor was coming from when he said we need to hit the streets and we need to go back out there. And the Democrats are sitting around with their hand, he's sitting on their hands, and they're not doing anything. They're not coming up with a messenger or a messenger. So I can understand the need to go out there and protest, but protest with love, you know, and imagine how many votes you could get with that. I remember I ran for president of my class at the university when I was a junior, the junior class, and I lost. But I lost by 2 votes, and I ran on the platform of love. I said we needed more love in the university, and I lost. But I still believe it.
You should have run on free beer.
Free beer would have won that one. Yeah, that was back in the 70s, you know, a long time ago. But anyway,
Seraphin, you're the man. Thank you, my friend.
Yeah, thanks, Tom.
Thank you, guys. I hope I didn't speak too much.
You gave us a good day. For Tom Seraphin of Seraphin Associates, author of the Seraphin Power Poll, and for Jeff Carlin, executive producer, WGN Radio, and for me, John Cass, editor of johncassnews.com, where you always get a good cup of Midwestern common sense. I know all of you, and I'm looking for all of you to be signing up for a new edition of johncassnews.com. Only $50 a year. Thanks to all of you for spending time with us and joining us today. And see you again next time on another edition of the Chicago Way podcast on WGN Plus.